So this Shir and Pashas Mishpatim is the Ilui Nishmat Arina Bat Ilya. Tien Nishmat Hatzra B'Torah Chaim. It's our Yahrzeit tonight. So last week in Pashat Yitro we got the Ten Commandments and we read about Matan Torah. But the other half of the story of Matan Torah is in the second half of Mishpatim. What the people were doing in response to Matan Torah, how they prepared for, how they dealt with afterwards. And the famous verse appears in Parshas Mishpatim rather than in Yitro, which is Moshe Veikach Sefer Abrit. Moshe took the Book of the Covenant in source number one, Veikra Bazne'am, and he read it out to the people. Vayomru, and the people said, Kol Asher Dibur Hashem, everything that God has said, Na'aseh V'nishma. We will do and we will listen. We will hear. Shema Nishma means also to understand or to think about or to contemplate or whatever the thing. So first we'll do it and then we'll understand it. And that is a very famous concept. The Gemara, if you want to know the Chazal's view of Matan Torah, it's all in the Gemara in Shabbat from 87 to 89. So in Peichet, Amar Rabba Cham Amar Rechama Barabi Chanina, my dichtiv, there's a verse in Shir Shirim which says, Ketapuach ba'etzei hayar. Right? It's not clear whether. The way the Gemara understands it, God is referring to the Jewish people as an apple tree, like an apple amongst the trees of the forest. Lamanim shelo Yisrael letapuach. Why are Yisrael likened to an apple? Lamalacha, to teach you that ma tapuach ze pirio kodim la'alav, just as an apple, the fruit comes before the leaves. Afisrael hikdimu na'aseh lish nishma. So to the Jewish people, says na'aseh before they said nishma. Now before I tell you what Rav Tzadok says about this, I wanted to make an observation that kind of took me on a wild detour when I was saying this year, which I kind of thought was interesting and then realized it was quite possibly wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. Which is as follows. I don't know if you've ever seen an apple tree, but it doesn't grow apples before it grows leaves.
Okay.
Which Tosfot points out. It's not my Chiddush Tosfot says this, that it's not true. Now, there is an opinion that what it means is the blossoms, which ultimately become the apples, form before the leaves do. May or may not be true, but it's true of many. I mean, I think of cherry, but there's many other trees that's also true. It's not unique about an apple. So Tosfot is bothered by this. Why does the Talmud say this about apples when it is not true? So the Tosfot on the spot there. Piriyot kodim la'alav. The fruit comes first. Hikshir Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam asks the following question. Shaharei anu ro'im shigadal kishari lanot. We see that apples grow the same as every other tree. There's nothing unique about apples or apple trees. So what does the Gemara mean? So he says in the Mefarish, he explains, the tapuach hainu etrog. When it says apple, it doesn't mean apple, it means etrog. Right? And the proof he has that apple can mean etrog is from a different verse in Shir HaShirim, which is Reach apecha ketapuchim, the fragrance of your face is like apples, mitagaminan, that's translated. Now we don't know who wrote the Targum on Shir HaShirim. We know that Unkos wrote the Aramaic translation on Chumash, and Yonatan ben Uziel wrote the Aramaic translation on Navi, but we don't know who wrote that. But whoever wrote this translation translates it, Kareach de Etroga. Right, the smell, the fragrance of apples, he translates as the fragrance of Etrog. So we see that Etrog and apple, sometimes apple can mean Etrog.
What's the correlation? Because apple isn't a citrus fruit and Etrog is, so how can the likeness be from the Christian concept of like create Hadar, they think of like the apple, and we think of a create Hadar as an etrog, right?
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to try and say something that kind of deals with that. So, well, doesn't really, whatever. Anyway, it's a good question. I'll leave the question as a question. But Tosfot is not saying that an apple is an etrog. He's saying the word tapuach in some context can mean etrog, which doesn't answer your question at all. But and Tosfot says etrog makes sense because period kodim le'alav, and etrog, the fruit does come before the leaves because Shadar be'ilan mishana l'shana. An etrog is unique, as far as I know, of all the fruit. Every other fruit falls off the tree at the end of the season, and there's nothing there for the winter. An etrog will stay on the tree and doesn't fall off, it just gets bigger and bigger. And therefore, all the leaves fall off the etrog tree, and the etrog stays on the tree. And achar shana, noshrin alav shalishtakad, at the end of the season, the leaves from that year fall off, or v'ayin alinachem, and new leaves grow. Have a period kodim la'otam alim, and therefore the fruit came toward those second leaves, and therefore it fits the drush of Chazal, and so that's Tosfot's answer. And apart from your question, which is a good one, that would be fine, except that I made the mistake of actually looking at the Targum on Shir Shirim that Tosfot says means etrog. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting, and it doesn't say what he says it says. Now, I think most people don't look up the Targum on Shir Hashirim when they learn this Tosfot, because I looked at a dozen different commentaries and I only found one who actually dealt with this issue. If you look in the Targum, Tosfot says the Targum, the translation of the word of the verse Re'acha Pecha, Ketapuchim, should be Re'acha De'etroga. But in my Shir Hashirim it says in source 4, Re'chehan Ye'nadiv K'Re'acha De'etapuchim. The Asba translate that. The smell is pleasant, pungent, like the smell of the apples of the Garden of Eden. So it says apples, not etrog. Which set me thinking, because also apples in the Garden of Eden is a bit odd, because we know it wasn't an apple, that was a mistake based on medieval artists rather than... Is there any source that says that the Garden of Eden was an apple? So everything I'm saying now is my own. Since I didn't find anybody who asked the question to ask, I don't know that. Now I'll tell you what somebody else says. So I was thinking, right? How can an apple be the Garden of Eden? So there's a Gemara in Tinus, which says when Yaakov came and stole the blessings, took the blessings that should have been Esau's, he put on Esau's clothing and covered his arms with sheepskin. And Yitzchak says, Vayoma, Re'ach b'ni, k're'ach d'eshe v'echo Hashem. The smell of my son is like the smell of a field that God has blessed. And Rashi, they comment, how can sheep, where we live, there's a bunch of goats on the other side of the road. And they reek. They really are not a pleasant smell. So how can Yitzchak think this is a pleasant smell when he's smelling dead goat skin or sheep skin? So Rashi there explains that the smell of the Garden of Eden came in with Yaakov when he went to Yitzchak. And the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Barajav Shmuel Barshilat Mishmei Derav Kereach Sadesh of Tapuchim. It's like a field, like the smell of a field of that field of apples. So on the one hand it is apples, on the other hand it's the Garden of Eden. We have the apples of the Garden of Eden. And Tosfot there in Tainit says, because apples aren't in the Garden of Eden, Shot Tapuchim, Yesh Mephoshim, Tapuchim, Kerech Etrogim. That when it says apples here, it also means Etrog. That it smelled like the Garden of Eden. That's the Rashi, which I should have put in my source, in my Sipach, so I'm just going to make a note for myself to do that. The Garden of Eden, and apples means Etrog. And that fits in nicely with the Midrash Rabbah in source number 7. One second. Okay. So in source number 7 we have a Midrash Rabbah, which says, Rebbe Abba da'achal ama etrog haya, the fruit which was eaten in the Garden of Eden, the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, was an etrog. That's why it says the woman saw the tree that it was good, the wood of the tree. Amat severe ezo ilan sheitzon echal kipiriyov ein at motzeh ele etrog. If you check all the trees, which ones have edible bark, the only one you'll find is an etrog. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll pretend it is for the purpose of this year. So, I was thinking, Tosfot says this verse tapuchim means etrog, when in my Targum it says apples of the Garden of Eden, but Tosfot says the apple of the Garden of Eden was an etrog, and therefore that's what he meant when he said, referred to that verse over there, which doesn't say the word etrog. And then, because my mind works in strange ways and it just kind of popped up, I was thinking, and this is kind of your answer, how can an etrog and an apple, there doesn't seem to be any correlation between etrog and apple. But if you're familiar with Greek mythology, and this doesn't answer your question at all, but Greek mythology, they made a chatana for Peleus and Thetis, who were the parents of Achilles, and the gods, they were gods, and the gods made a big wedding for them, and everyone was there except for Eris, who didn't get invited, and Eris is the goddess of strife, and she didn't get invited, so she destroyed the proceedings by throwing a golden apple into the middle of the party, and she said, this apple, it was written on the apple, this should be awarded to the most beautiful woman here. So Zeus to have a beauty contest. There were three, Hera, who was Zeus's wife, Athena and Aphrodite, all competed to see who was the most beautiful woman so they could get this golden apple. And Zeus didn't want to have any of that because he was the king of the gods and he knew what was going to lead to. So he asked Paris to judge the beauty contest, who was immortal. And all these three goddesses came to Paris and they tried to bribe him. And each one offered him something different. And Aphrodite offered him that he could marry the most beautiful woman in the world. So he awarded her the prize of the golden apple, and then he went and married Helen of Troy, and that led to the Trojan War, which is the whole... So, it just seemed to me that there are interesting... And this story, there's many different versions of this story, but it was known... Homer refers to it just kind of in passing. It was a well-known story of Homer. Homer lived even before the Midrashim were written, but the Midrashim are telling stories that go back much earlier as well. So I wonder if there's any kind of cross-fertilization that comes with a golden apple, which an etrog is kind of a golden apple. It's called a pre-eighth hadar, a beautiful fruit, and this is an apple which is to find the most beautiful person, and it's the apple of discord, of strife, which is the Garden of Eden when they ate the apple, in inverted commas, that led to all the trouble. And actually the golden apple originally came from the garden of something or other, I can't remember, which was all the nymphs lived and all the whatever. So I don't know if that's any... Anything to do with it at all, but it just kind of seems to be like an interesting parallel because my brain works in funny ways. Anyway, so therefore I wanted to say that Tosfot says, that the verse says, etrog, but even though it says apple, because the apple of the Garden of Eden, for Tosfot was the etrog. I found in the back of the Gemara, after much hunting, the Rami Ronchberg says to have a look in a book called Bina Le'itim, which I had never heard of until he told me to look there, so I did. Luckily there's HebrewBooks.com and you can search and find it. And he asks the same question, how come Tosfot quotes a translation of a verse that doesn't have the translation it says it does? And he makes the question even worse, because on the verse that Tosfot was talking about, Ketubot Beitzei Hayar, right, over there, the Gemara, Gemara Shabbat, is learning about Nasa Venishma, from source number 9, Ketapuch Betzei Hayah, Kendodi Ben Habanim. Right, and it says that means, Tosfos says that means Etrog. If you look at the Targum on that verse, you'll see that it says, Hechma Tiyai Umeshuvach Etroga Ben Ilan Esrak, Bekulia Am Lomodin Yate. I don't actually know how to translate that, fudged it, but it does say there Etrog. The very verse that Tosfos was talking about, where it says it means Etrog, actually the Targum there says Etrog, even though Tosfot refers you to a different translation of a different verse, which says etrog. The fourth word there is etrog.
Can I just go back to it?
Yes.
The verse in Shir HaShirim that you said it's likened to Naseb and Ishmael, can't say.
That was the Gemara in Shabbat in source number 2. The Gemara said, just as a tree, the apple tree, produces fruit before leaves, so too the Jews have Naseb before Nishma.
Right.
And Tosfot said that apple means etrog, and he brought a proof from the Targum of a different verse where apple is etrog.
Oh, just in the way that it brings down an apple in relation to the Benetra.
Right, all right. But in that very same verse, it says that etrog in place of apple, and therefore Azariah Figo, who was a 16th century Italian rabbi, says it seems that Tosfot had his Targum back to front, and it didn't say Etrog in that verse, and it did say Etrog in that verse, and he was looking at a different version of the Targum than we have, which I'm sure is a much more sensible and correct answer than my one, but I thought it might have some merit anyway, and I worked hard on it, so I thought I'd quote it. Anyway, back to the Shir and Mitzvot HaKohen now, after that detour. That's what. And the Gemara says that Naseh v'Nishma is like the fruit and the leaf. First we said Naseh, and then we said Nishma. So first was the fruit, and then the tree. Rav Tzadok is basically bothered, and this is the main idea of the Shir. In Naseh v'Nishma, which one is the more important one, and which one is the secondary one?
The doing.
Doing is more important. Okay, good. That's what everyone else says as well. But Rav Tzadok says, no, it's not true. It depends how you define... Well, doing, I think, makes sense. Doing is doing. But what does Nishma mean? That's the...
Understanding.
Okay.
Hearing.
Okay.
Listening.
Good. All of the above.
But in relation to, let's say, tzedakah, people, they say that, you know, actually giving tzedakah is more important than feeling compassion towards. So that's why I would think doing the actual mitzvah would be more important than just listening and understanding it.
Okay, I like that answer. I like that, and actually, that's in a sense what Rav Tzadok is going to give. I found two different answers from Rav Tzadok. I'm not sure if they're the same or if they are different. They are different. I'm not sure whether they really ultimately mean the same thing. One of those answers is similar to what you're saying. Okay, before we get to Rav Tzadok, there is the same Gemara in Shabbat at the bottom of the page talks about Hahul Mina, the Chazia L'Rava. There was a Sadducee who saw Rava, who was sitting and learning in the Beit Midrash, .. The Sincino Gemara notes that there were no Sadducees in the time of Rava. And therefore it looks as it may well be that was a censored... It doesn't say Sadducees, it's men, which means a heretic, and it could be that was a censored later by the Christians, but that's irrelevant. He said to him, Amalek, I'm a Paziza. You are a rash people, hasty people. You put your mouth before your ear. Right? You know, as you said Naseh before you said Nishma. We'll do it before you even hear what it is. Right? Akad bechuzai su kamaisu. I'm not bother translating because that is connected to what happened in the Beit Midrash there. Beresha ibai lechu lemishma. First you should have heard what God's talking about. Imetzitu, kablitu, if it makes sense, then you could have accepted it. Eloi, like a vision, if you couldn't do it, if you couldn't have done it properly, then you shouldn't have accepted it. Right? It doesn't make any sense. You can't say, we'll do it before you tell us what it is we have to do. Amrnei, Rabbi said back, Anam, the Saginam, the Shleimusa, we, Israel, who go with Shleimut, with perfection, Ketiv Banat says about us, Tumas Yisharim Tenachem, the integrity of the upright shall guide them. Hanach inshi desagin ba'alilusa, but you people who walk in perversity, it says in the verse, v'salach bochim yesh dam, I think, I'm not sure what the translation is, the perverseness of the treacherous shall destroy them. Now, that's not really a very clear answer to quite a simple question. Not quite clear what's going on there. So, Rav Tzadok explains. Source number 12, the Gemara says, Matapuach, right? Matapuach ze puryo kodim le alav tach Yisrael hekdimu nasa ben shema. Just as the apple, the fruit comes before the leaves, so too the Jews said nasa for nishma. Ratzon lomar, this means ki ha'ala hu shomer lepri shlo yitko ke lepri. The leaf is a protection for the fruit, so the fruit doesn't get ruined. Yeah, again, if you were going to speak botany with me, I'm not sure that the function of leaves. I thought it was more to do with chlorophyll, but we'll ignore that. Okay, the leaves are there to protect the... Definitely, they're secondary. The leaves are there as a means of making the fruit. The kach hashmiya, the agasha, the amitu, the shivisbarach, and similarly, the hearing, which Rav Tzadok says means the feeling of the truth of God, shehu mitzaveihu. that it is God who's commanding me to do these mitzvahs. My connection, my spiritual connection with God, and my knowledge that He is the commander, Hu HaShomer LeMaaseh. That's what protects the action. Because if I have a sense that God is commanding me to do this, it's impossible for me to make a mistake or to go to just as the Sadducee says to Rava, he said you should have first heard and then decided you could keep it. But the Tzaddik explains, ki hashmiya hu hakavala b'lev. Hearing it means I accept it in my heart. I accept the concept. Kashir magish amitah l'shem yishbarach. When you've got that feeling of the truth of God, b'lev in the heart, as kol netiyot l'ta'avot ha'olam k'avak yifrachu v'nitzbatlim v'nefasim v'nei pachad v'hadar ge'ono yishbarach. Then any kind of desires that would take you away from that disappear, and I'm meaning this because you've got this connection to God. So the Sadducee was really saying, Zah shayav ta'anato, shalomim, shahem kiblu avodah chazaka, kol kach liyot hapri kodem la'alim. Right, he's saying, why did you guys make it harder for yourself? You should have first accepted God, believed in God, and then you would have been able to do everything easily, but you first will do it without that protection of the certainty of God.
So if you think in terms of like human beings, that's not necessarily the case. Like, you start learning stuff when you're very young, you can't necessarily understand what you're doing. Like, teaching kids brachot, then they don't really get why they're doing it.
Yeah. Yes, we do and we should do, but I'm not sure.
That can only truly, like, makes an impact once they understand why they're doing it as well.
And more than that, sometimes people spend their whole lives with like brachot is still what they were when they were, what they're thinking when they're 5 years old, and they never develop into a real concept of brachot or of other things. You have to teach your children, and you have to get them to do things and whatever it is. But that's all just practice and preparation for actually doing the mitzvot properly.
Right.
I think. But that's it. I'm not here to give educational advice. I'm just. Rav Tzaddik is saying that the reason, I think he's, it's not his chiddush, the reason people do the wrong thing is because they forget about God. Or they forget that it's God who's telling them to do this. And if they really believe that God said please do this, then there wouldn't be any question. So that's what it means if you're a nishma, if I first hear God say it to me, then I'll do it. But if I first want to do it and then hear God, that makes it much more difficult that way around. It's not how I ever learned this Gemara. In other words, the Gemara, I always thought the Gemara was saying that this min is making fun of the Jewish people for being foolish or hasty. It was sort of saying he's saying they did it the hard way instead of the easy way. So, the other pre-Kalim, I mean, Shloi, Klal, and Chuse, Alin, and Shomri, and Otto, the Layan Izuk. They didn't have the protection of the Shemir. Right, they should have first heard God and had the and felt the glory of God and the meaning of his words, and then they would have accepted it easier. They're Shivo and Rava says back. Achen da gina b'shleimuta. K'tivam tumat shayim t'nachem. Because we are shleimim, because we are wholesome with God, therefore He protects us anyway, and it says that the integrity of the upright shall guide them. Shekasher ochim b'derech yeshar, shorot ha'jimin u'smol, if you just do the right thing, just do the right actions, rakiyat oseh devarom mekodem, v'shomrim v'pri v'loi ha'aleh, kasher nishmo me'atmo, ha'yidei ha'aleh, v'loi shmiratam. Right. If you just do what you're supposed to do, if you just do the mitzvahs without asking any questions, which is what you were saying before, kind of, that you just give the stuck and don't worry about the emotions and the feelings and even the God, but just do it, then that will guide you in the right way. This will direct you to the right place. That will lead you to discover God and to hear God through doing the actions. This is the actions that take precedence. Exactly what you said before. Don't wait till you kind of hear God speaking to you and then go and do the mitzvahs. Do the mitzvahs, and in that way you'll hear God God beats you. That's if you're doing it, shleimim. Whereas if you're doing it for the wrong reasons or with ulterior motives or wrong, then you'll never discover God.
Yeah, I guess it could be like waiting forever for a burst of inspiration to hear God, so to speak.
Right.
But if you start off with the action, then eventually you're going to be questioning actually what not, hopefully, eventually questioning why you're doing it and what the meaning behind it.
Right. As long as the actions are not just actions.
Right.
But if it's the shleimut, if you're doing it, whatever that means, wholeheartedly or wholesomely or completely or perfectly, then that will lead you to hear God. And Kara Razal, right? Chazal say this concept nasib for nishma. Is Rashi Malachesh Mishtabishim? What's the secret that the angels use? Hayinu she'etzlam ha'asiyahu tekef k'shalav rasmanai yibrach. At the end of the sort of that, as soon as God has the idea, the angel rushes off to do it. She'asuhem osim she'enam bali. They haven't got any free choice. They run first of all to do it. And only afterwards they then try and figure out why did God tell me to do that, what's the meaning behind it. But first God says do it, and they run and do it, and that's like the Jewish people, now finish up, first do it, and then try and figure it out afterwards. Which is probably the standard, almost the standard understanding of Naseh and Nishma. That through doing we come to an understanding of what it means. Okay, that's wonderful. Let's just start it from Machshavas Chayot. Sichat Malchei Hashayim. But in Likutim Ma'amarim, he says something slightly differently. In Sichat Malchei Hashayim, Nishma means the feeling that God is commanding me to do it. So over here in 13, he says something slightly differently. He's talking about the three meals of Shabbat and the different Kabbalistic prayers you say before the meals, and it refers to the Chag HaKadisha, which is the Tapuach, Shamru, Zabperk, Giva, Piri HaKadim La'alav, Ken Yashar HaGiva Nazel Nishma. Right, fine. V'sof kol devar hu tachlito. The end of the process is the goal. Whatever is at the end is the key, is what you want to have. V'me'achad v'sof kol abriya hu asiya, Gufanit. Since the end of creation was the physical creation of bodies, Yadanu Dzeh Tachli, we know that's the purpose, that's the goal of creation. Creation started in the worlds of, I don't know what, Atik and Abiyah, right, and Asilus and Bria and Yetzirah, until they get down to the world of Asiya, and the physical, the lowest level is the world of Asiya, and it becomes the physical, and that's the purpose of creation. Everything preceding that, God's the ultimate goal of creation. And lechach nikra zeh period. That's why na'aseh, the action, is called the pre. Right? Vanishma alim, but the nishma, which is in a higher world, a different concept, that is secondary to the na'aseh, because na'aseh is the purpose of all of creation. There was a discussion on the internet about orthopraxy. People who do all the mitzvahs and look for them and do everything they're supposed to, they don't really believe, or they're not sure whether they believe or whatever. Without wishing to go into that discussion or justify that, one could almost understand the Shabbat Tzaddik as saying, the most important thing is what you do. What you think and what you feel and what all that other stuff either will come afterwards or but it's the key thing is the actions, that's how we decide, rather than on a heretical viewpoint or those kind of issues. I'm not sure it's fair to be done to a tzaddok, but perhaps it could be. And so naseh first, and then nishma is a less important thing, and naseh is the fruit, and nishma is the leaves is the secondary thing. So then he says, "Gam de alim v'chol makom drash amash einu meikar mekovan v'amaseh hu alim shash osim mitzvah amaseh talim zeh l'tzorach kiyum hachmato." This doesn't make sense. I've edited out all the key bits. And it doesn't make any sense anymore. He quotes another Gemara, which I didn't put there, where it says the other way around, that the Chochmah is the pre, is the essence, and the actions are secondary to the Chochma, and really that's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. In source 14 it says, Rechanan does Amir, Kol Shema'asav Merubin Me Chochmato, anyone whose actions are greater than his wisdom, Chochmato Mitkayimet, his wisdom will endure. Kol Shema Chochmato Merubin Me'asav, his wisdom is greater than his actions, Ein Chochmato Mitkayimet, his wisdom will not endure. Now, Chochma is the Ma'asim are a way to preserve the Chochma, but the Chochma is the key, is the important thing. So, Rav Tzadok says, I think, that again, every time I've learned this, I come out different, so I reserve the right to change my mind again. The Gemara in Shabbat says that action is the key thing, that's the pre. Yeah. And the result says that makes sense, because that's the purpose of creation. Creation is physical in the physical world, therefore the action is the key thing. However, elsewhere we find that the nishma, the hearing, which is really chokhmah, to understand and figure it out, that's really the key thing. And that's a mission in Pirkei Avot that implies that's the key thing. And so that should be the pre, and the ma'asim should be the alim, should be the leaves to protect the chokhmah, to protect the wisdom.
The first idea is that the physical world is the vehicle by which we, through which we create the connection with Hashem, in which case we understand.
Right, and the nishma is like, correct. So Tzadok wants to make a distinction, which is, Na'aseh means we'll do it. Nishma means we'll hear whether we want to do it or not. We'll try to understand it. That's where we have free choice, in the Nishma. First, tell me what it is. I'll think about it. If I'll do it, I won't do it. I can only have free choice in the Nishma. The Na'aseh means I'll just do it, regardless of what you say. Which is why I'm not going to do the Na'aseh first,
right,
because they are robots. They don't have any free choice. But it's in the Nishma that we have the free choice, and elsewhere, the Chochma, the free choice is the purpose of creation. I'm conflating Chochma with free choice, but you need Chochma to understand what is the correct choice to make. So Rav Tzadok wants to have two different ways of looking at the world. There is the world of the physical world, this is getting kind of backwards. There's the physical world, and then there's our point of view, and then God's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And from God's point of view, there is no free choice.
Because any decision we make, which we think is free choice, has been
every action that we do has already been decreed and declared,
right,
in the Chassidic, thinking that everything, nothing happens in this world without God planning it and decreeing it beforehand. So there's no.
I mean, we can have two options, but those options have existed already. Like,
right? More than that, God knows which one we're going to do.
Right.
So we don't have. So we're going to get to that key question of God's knowledge and our free choice. But Rav Tzadok says they exist in different planes. They're different.
Mm-hmm.
From our point of view, we have free choice. From God's point of view, He knows everything. We have no free choice. But I think there's a third level as well, which is that even in the world where there's no free choice, meaning even though our actions are all predestined, how we think about those actions, how we feel about those actions, is where we have free choice. In the realm of thought is where we have free choice. For example, I do something I shouldn't do, and that was really God. That's God told me to do that. God made me do that. I didn't have free choice. I had to go and do whatever that thing was. However, how I feel about doing that, my emotional connection, my intellectual connection to that's where I have free choice. I can, and conversely with mitzvahs, if I do a mitzvah, I can, we pask in general mitzvahs do not need kavanah. But if I do the mitzvah with the kavanah, that's what makes them to a real mitzvah. If I do it without, that's just God forcing me to do it because I have no free choice. That's the basis point of Tzadok for tshuva.
Right.
How does tshuva work? Tshuva means taking an action that was a bad, I did an avera, and realizing, recognizing that it was all God, it was all everything God wanted me to do, and turning that avera into another expression of God in this world. By changing my thought, I can retroactively turn the avera into a mitzvah.
So the actual three choices that internal conflict between doing the actions, however slight that might be, it could be like
right.
instantaneous decision, but
right.
still like, yes or no.
Right, even though really you had no choice.
Right.
But in your mind, the choice is how you feel about doing it, how hard you fight against it, or how hard you push to do it, or how, that's the error. And the ultimate thing is the awareness that everything comes from God and that I have no free choice. That's the highest level of connection to God. But as long as I think I have free choice, then I'm judged for that concept of free choice. So, how
but
do I do
that? Can that just be used as, like, scapegoat argument? You know, I have no free choice, so what am I supposed to do?
Right, it's a dangerous idea. From God's point of view, we have no free choice, because he knows everything. From our point of view, we have free choice, or we appear to have free choice, but the ultimate goal is to recognize that everything I'm doing is God's will. And it's my thinking about that as well. I mean, thinking, I want to do the mitzvahs and I don't want to do the averas.
Okay.
And
then we know what God really wants us to do.
Right.
So, like, once we have that concept of, oh, actually, God does exist, and have that aha
right.
year and all of that.
Right. And if I do an avera, I should fight very hard against it to stop myself doing it. If I do it, I have to recognize it. And it's part of my choosing to recognize that it's also from God. But it is a dangerous concept and can be misused, and I'm glad you said that because Anita's saying. But I think that is fundamental to most chassidut.
Right.
Particularly, Rutsarok says explicitly, I think Brasov chassidut also is that underlying everything happens is God's will. And it can be taken, as you say, to say I'm not really responsible for my actions. Which I think is a bad thing. I think it's a dangerous thing on many different levels. But for some people, that's where the goal they're trying to get to. So we're trying to work it out. So again, there's God's point of view, no free choice. There's our point of view, where there's no free choice in the realm of the physical, but there is free choice in the realm of the thought.
Mm-hmm.
And those three all live together. So Rutsarok continues from what he said before, from all that was cut out that didn't make any sense, in terms of whether the Nishma is more important or the Nafi is more important. The Torah, or the Chochmah, is the purpose in terms of Bechira, in terms of free choice. And that's only possible with the Chochmah, which is why it says Barash Torah Tavli in the Gemara, says the antidote to the Etzahara is Torah. The Ika Mekuvan Bebriya, Briya Tabachira, Shiotaka Adam, Hayashiv Chob, Beda Torah, Vetzichwa, Hatov Min Hara, Vachad Min Achaim. The ultimate purpose of creation, of the creation of free choice, is, which is the purpose of mankind, is to choose with knowledge and intellect to do the good and not the bad, and to choose life. That's a hidden train spotting, choose life. In Ken, Ikesh said, Lot the Chokhma Shabo, Hokacha Bechira. Therefore, the main struggle in the world of Chokhma is the power of Bechira, free choice. Vizel Apri, that means the fruit in the context, not in Al-Gemara where the fruit is the action, but in the Mishnah Avot and in the other Gemara, which he right there, the Torah. Chokhmah is the essence because that is what gives us the free choice. Etc. Ki mikol makom ha-ma'aseh hu yasod kavua ketam shem ha-pergum etomnin mitzvahs meginas aleihin. The actions are the foundation on which the free choice can come. Right? As it says that the mitzvahs protect them. Thinking too much can be dangerous and can lead you the wrong way. So it has to be grounded in action, and then you have to use your logic to come to get free choice so that the actions are secondary to the chokhmah. The purpose of chokhmah is tshuva or ma'asim tovim, is tshuva and good deeds. V'zeo tachlit ha'mekuvan v'olam hazeh. So in this world, meaning in the world of Asiyah, the goal is the action. The purpose of free choice is to get to action, but the action is to get you to the right free choice, which is happening on a higher world or a different plane.
And if you intellectualize it too much, then you end up going astray?
Then you could be and end up anywhere. Right. If you don't ground it, you could end up anywhere. Which we, yeah, I mean, I think there are many examples of that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's why all the mitzvahs of the Torah are actions. Do this or don't do that. It's not think this or don't think that. But in the future, now when he says in the future, I think he means in the world of machshava.
Mm-hmm.
There, the bechira is the essence. In the world of action, the physical world, the mitzvahs are the main thing, because they get that's what God wants you to do, and use your bechira to do the mitzvahs. In the world of machshava, it's the bechira is the main thing, and the action is what grounds you so that you have the right machshava. That's why the naseh for nishma is the secret the angels use. Angels don't have free choice, as you said. You have to, if you want free choice, in the world of free choice, you have to first have nishma, so you can know this is the right thing and that's the wrong thing. But when we say naseh without any nishma, we're just saying we're God's children, we do what he tells us, because we're going to do it. V'ki'ilu ein lanu shum b'chira, v'neti l'tzad acher. Right, and we say we don't want free choice, we're just going to do what you say without free choice. V'yakach ma'achei ha'sharit she'ein lan b'chira. That is the power of the angels who don't have free choice. So, right, so in the world of Asiyah, this is becoming clear to me as I'm speaking, it's very good, thank you very much. In the world of Asiyah, the essence is Asiyah, is the action. And the free choice is just a means to get us to do that. In the world of Machshava, the Bechira is the essence, and the Mitzvah means to get us to do that. So therefore, both, depending on the context, one is the Pri and the other one is the Alim, depending on which, whether you're looking in the world of Maisa or the world of Machshava. Which means, I think, I can skip the next source. Which is talking about from...
So when they were saying that, the definition of that was in the physical world, which is why it's brought down.
Exactly, which is why that's the pre, the action is,
right.
Is the pre in that context. But in the world of learning Torah and the world of Machshava, which is the Gemara didn't bring, but ends also the mission of Pirkei Avot, which means I can skip, I'll go through, I think source 16 is a very important source, but... shall we read it? Yes. Okay. Source 16 says as follows. Zeo sod hayadiyah v'bechira. This, and I didn't tell you what this was because I've skipped a whole bunch of pages, 100 pages, but this is the essence, the secret of the problem between God's knowledge and free choice. Shetiris by Arizal, b'sof sefer arba me'at shekel kesef. Arizal wrote a book in which he says, Hayadiyah b'makom acher v'bechira b'makom acher. It might be a chad, it might be a typo. That yediyah happens in one place, and God's knowledge is in one place, and free choice is in another place. The two do not coexist at the same time. But both are true from different viewpoints. V'chein, legabeinu, from our point of view, ha-bechira, we have free choice. Legabe Hashem, yitbarach, hayediyah. From God's point of view, he knows everything, we have no free choice. Or be'emet, legabe Hashem, yitbarach, ein makom le-bechira. From God's point of view, there is no room for free choice. When we merit the revelation of God to the level that we can understand God, have the same understanding as God understands things, meaning when our neshama connects back with God, in the future the righteous will be called by God's name, they'll become part of God. As nireh de'ein makom l'chir kal, then we'll see that really there's no room for free choice. V'zeo alma d'kashut, shechot mosho kodesh b'rosha, shem yitbarach emet. That's in the world of truth, where it says that God's signature is true. Shekafim mashu yediyata, who I am, it's what God knows that's the truth. And there's no room for free choice because it just is. It has to be like that and it can't be any other way. Ach et leino hu bechira, but from our point of view, in our world, we have free choice. Kianu ba'olam hazeh. Because we're in this world, physical world, and our knowledge is not like God's knowledge. We can't have God's knowledge in the physical world because it has to be only in God's point of view. Our world is the world of action. Because God arranged things or decreed that in the world of action, there should be free choice, and we should not be able to know how God runs the world. But that's really irrelevant, because someone's now making a distinction between the world of action and the world of machshava, not God's point of view and our point of view. But which is good, because now I understand Rav Dessler much better. So I think Rav Dessler, in my opinion, took Hasidus and introduced it into the Lithuanian yeshiva system. He was, I don't know if he was the first, but he was most popular and most influential person taking Hasidic ideas and wrapping them up in a package that made him acceptable in Ponovich Yeshiva. And it tremendously influenced the Haredi world today. All of the Mashkichim today, all of the Balei Machshava in the Haredi world today are either Talmidim or Talmidim of Talmidim of Rav Dessler. And that's why the misnagged Lithuanian yeshiva will say that I'm very Hasidic in its outlook. And I think what Rav Dessler says, Rav Dessler destroyed the concept of free choice. Right, everyone quotes Rav Dessler. You talk about free choice, always Rav Dessler and his Bechira point. In a nutshell, Rav Dessler, the Torah says you've got free choice. Every Rishon says we have free choice. Rambam says you can have free choice in anything. Anything you do, you're responsible for. Rav Dessler takes all that and says, says only most things in your life you have no free choice over. Mm-hmm. Most things are either things that you always do and have no choice but to do them, or things that you'll never do and have no choice but not to do them. And the Bechira is only in a very thin line. That's the area where it's exactly balanced, 50-50 in your head, should I or shouldn't I do this? Uh-huh. Only there do you have free choice. If you imagine a football pitch, when you start off kind of by the goal mouth and you work way along the pitch, so anything behind you is, let's say, mitzvahs that you already do and avers you're not going to do. Anything in front of you is stuff that you're never going to do those mitzvahs and you're certainly all do those avers. And your battle is on a very thin line. So he took a concept of free choice, which was all-encompassing and limited it very much, to the extent that many people, in Rav Dessler's words, will never actually have free choice. It's possible for a person to live their whole life and never exercise their free choice, never have free choice. I have heard people say that according to Rav Dessler, every person must have at least one free choice, one moment of free choice in their life. But I think here he says not even that. But there's certainly limits. Certainly from saying everything is free choice, saying there exists at least one moment in your life where you're using free choice. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's severely limited. and he discusses this. He tackles this, answers this claim in Volume 1 of Michtam Eliyahu. He talks about, he starts off here talking about, not quoting him by name, but I think he's talking about Descartes. And I think that's why I am. He wants to make a distinction between the ego, the I, the Anochi, which is the only thing you're certain of. And he says there, the only thing you're absolutely certain of is Anochi. Is me. Everything in the world around me that I sense or feel or touch or anything else, that's only kind of second-hand information and is subjective. I experience it this way, you experience it a different way. For me it's hot for you, it's cold for me, it's big for you, it's small, whatever it is. The only thing that is certain is the Anochi, and everything else is subject. To me that sounds very much like Descartes in his meditations.
Right. Could there also be times where you're not completely certain of yourself? Like you have these like moments where you're like, wait, is this really happening for me? Is that really happening?
Descartes was bothered by that.
Yeah.
Descartes solved that problem by saying that God wouldn't lie to me.
Right. And probably because you're thinking of
if I think it's real,
then it must be real.
My logic, what Descartes says, and I don't think he's necessarily right, but Descartes says my logic is solid. Uh-huh. I think that I exist, and only a deceptive God would maybe think that I do exist and I don't exist, and therefore I must really exist.
Mm-hmm.
So he builds God into his cogito ergo sum. And I'll just say again, he doesn't quote any sources, anyone before him, who say that, which leads me to think he's really quoting Descartes. And he says, that's the only thing I'm certain of, the Anochi. The other subject. And he wants to use that to explain the difference between the world of Asiya and the world of Yetzirah.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking quasi-Kabbalah. But he's going to the Musa Shmuz and Pono Yeshiva, so it can't really be Kabbalah. And he wants to say that Anochi exists in the world of Yetzirah. It's a higher plane where I am certain of things, and the subject of things are on the world of Asiya. That's the first page of this essay. It should be page 307, not 306. Starts on 305. He says, Yesh Makshim, some people ask a stupid question, a meaningless question. Hen kol yin olam hazeh, hu bederach tiba masoveh. Everything that happens in this world is cause and effect. Every cause necessarily has that effect. Every effect came from a cause. Then how can we have free choice? Everything is right. If you have a watchmaker and a watch, and the watch just does what it does, and everything happens, there's no room for free choice. Anything that happens comes from that which came before it. Now, if I was being slightly cynical, I would say he's referring here to Skinner or certain forms of Freudian psychology, where we say that we're all conditioned and we're a product of our upbringing, and therefore we have no real choice in what we do. That, you know, I was raised like this, my parents spoke to me like that, so I went through this stage like that, and whatever, and therefore I'm a product of that. And he's going to reject, he's rejecting this, but some people say that we don't have free choice because everything has a cause and an effect. Those people who ask so foolish, their whole lives they spend chasing after disgusting and corrupt desires. They don't even know there's like a free choice point. There aren't any kind of limits at all. They have never in their lives had free choice. It's true, they are like robots. They're just a product of everything. If you're asking that kind of a question, you don't know what free choice is. And certainly the desires that are raging within them are the causes of everything that rule over them, and they haven't got any free choice. Right? So that's, if you're asking that question, then it means you haven't got free choice. You're a kind of person who is ruled entirely by whatever it is that, whichever psychological, whichever form of psychoanalysis you're using. But what we've explained based on the different worlds, the question doesn't begin. Why? Because ha'anochi, the I, the ego, which is nitzutz me'olam ha'yitzirah, which is from a higher world of Yitzirah, there you've got free choice, you feel the free choice. Even if someone's forcing somebody else to do something, do this or I'll kill you, whatever it is, right? The person feels that he's deciding whether he's going to give up his life and may as well be forced, or whether he's going to give in this time. Kol inyan ha'anochiyot pirusho ani ha'machlit ha'bocher v'acharai. The concept of ego, of the I, of the anochi, means I am the one who decides, I choose, I'm responsible. This is the antithesis of those forms of psychoanalysis which say that you're not your product. Ach ha'sagat sibal misavev hiba mehavchana ha'chushit ha'gashmit shi'chitonit. The idea of cause and effect only comes from the external world, which is the physical world of the senses, which is the subjective world. Havchanat hanochi habocher, he ani tzut habav olam hetzirah, but the concept is the I who does the choosing is in the world of Yetzirah. Havchanat sivam sovev shosha ach olam ha'asiyah. and cause mistakes in the world of Asiya. Alibid Ashkafat Olam Haytira, Einan Shum Havchana Sibam says Kashmir. In the world of Yetzirah, in the world of Anochi, in the world of Ika, there's no cause and effect, it's all entirely one thing. Now, I think he's saying the same thing as Rav Tzadok, that in the world of Na'aseh, really there is no free choice. The goal is just, I do it, without even, like, thinking about it's only a means to get me to do what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. In the world of Asiyah, in the world of Yetzirah, or Machshava, or whatever it's called, that's why I have free choice. My free choice only exists in my perception of how I'm doing things. The free choice is in my mind. My actions really are governed by cause and effect, or by whatever the other things are that cause and govern them. Which is an idea. I can see how the Hasidic system with the psychology, and they go very nicely together. And I think Rambam were turning this grave is such an idea. I think it's a very comforting idea on the one hand, and potentially dangerous, as you said. It can be used either way. So that's it. The Nasi, the Nishma, the Nasi is the Ikar in Olam HaAsiya. The Nishma is secondary to it. Whereas in Olam HaMachshava, Olam Yitzirah, the Nishma is the Ikar, and Nasi is secondary. That end.